This is the IBJ podcast for the week of December 13th, 2021, brought to you by Taft. I'm your host, Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Now, the running joke here in my office is that I often will end a podcast interview by saying, "Hey, best of luck on your new project. We'll check back in a few months to see how it's going." We follow up on occasion, but new news always takes precedent. But we have an example this week of a story's second chapter that demands to be told. In April 2019, I interviewed local tech executive Eric Tobias about a surprising new acquisition. Tobias, along with partners Scott Craigie and Andrew Davis, bought The Vogue in Broad Ripple. Now, we all know it as the entertainment venue that has anchored Broad Ripple Village's front doorstep on College Avenue for 83 years. Now, to be clear, they didn't buy the building. They bought the business that presents concerts and other events in The Vogue, and they signed a 10-year lease to continue occupying the theater. And they had big plans to beef up the venue's schedule, staging more live music, as well as a broad mix of stuff, including movie nights, author events, e-sport competitions, yoga classes, you name it. They got off to a strong start, and then, of course, we all know what happened. The Vogue closed abruptly on March 12, 2020, pretty much the day it seemed the whole world decided en masse to take cover from the pandemic. Today, the Vogue nightclub is still with us. The same guys are running it, having navigated an intense learning curve in one of the most problematic industries for a public health crisis. We aren't out of the woods by any means, but we thought this was the right time to check back in with Eric, if possible. He has a very full plate with his day job as a partner in the High Alpha Venture Studio, which has helped launch and or support more than 24 tech companies since 2015. And I was very fortunate to enlist IBJ's newest reporter, Dave Lindquist, to interview Eric. You probably know Dave from the 22 years he spent covering music and pop culture for the Indianapolis Star. We are very lucky to have him at IBJ, where he continues to cover arts and culture, as well as our retail and restaurant beat. Now, Dave and Eric get started by talking about the day the live entertainment industry crashed to the ground in 2020, and the paths that Eric and his partners took to keep the business going. Now, looking forward, Eric says they faced some entrenched new lifestyle patterns that indicate patrons are still skittish about attending concerts. The ownership group is getting more involved in live streaming concerts and promoting shows in other venues. Here's their conversation.
I'm Indianapolis Business Journal reporter Dave Lindquist, and I'm happy to welcome Eric Tobias to the IBJ podcast.
Hi, Dave.
Welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
I remember a day in April of 2019 when I met with you, Scott, and Andrew at The Vogue. It was a dream come true for you gentlemen. You are now the new owners of Broad Ripple's crown jewel. You obviously could not have anticipated what the next months would bring and what was around the corner. How did The Vogue navigate the challenges of the pandemic?
When when people ask me about this, I say, you know, owning a music venue, best first year of my life. maybe one of the most challenging second years. That meeting we had in April, we were flying high. Couldn't really believe what had happened. And we did have an amazing first year. We did a lot of great shows. We learned a ton. It was our first foray into the music business, coming from technology backgrounds. And then we had a band on the stage in March of 2020, Drive-By Truckers, and literally they were doing their sound check, and that was it. We had to shut it all down. It was very challenging, you know, not unlike many businesses where our revenue stream was cut kind of overnight, and yet our expense structure really didn't change. You know, we had a lot of commitments that needed to be fulfilled. So I think we learned a lot about our fortitude for the business, and we learned a lot about our staff, and then we learned a lot about the community's love and passion for the venue. I can't tell you how many notes I got from random fans, like, "Hey, if there's anything I can do," you know, people offering to come by and buy a t-shirt if that would be helpful. And that was really, amongst many things, that was one of the things that, you know, really stood out during that time. but it was tough.
I was going to ask you about that night, March 12th, I mm-hmm. think. I always think of that day as the day where the pandemic really became real for almost everyone.
Yeah.
But just in October of 2021, Drive-By Truckers came back and played your venue.
Yeah.
What were your emotions like on each of those nights?
Yeah. I happened to be in the venue on the March 12th. I'm not there every night, of course, but that one I was there. And to your point, I mean, we all were kind of following this thing that seemed far away, and that brought it really close to home. I think the NBA shut down that same day, and
the Big Ten basketball tournament was downtown.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And it was very surreal. I remember the band sort of being like, well, what do we do now?
Sure.
You know, and everybody kind of processing that and realizing they all needed to make their way home and we needed to make our way home. So to have that come full circle was pretty special, to have them back, and they felt it was pretty special.
Nice.
You know, I know you see a lot of shows, I see a lot of shows, and it's different now. It's different for the artist, it's different for the fan. I hope that continues forever. It likely won't, right? We'll all forget these times.
Jaded.
Yeah, we'll go back to being jaded. But it sure has been nice to have artists and fans be so appreciative of being back.
One of the common phrases I've heard from people in the music industry is, we were one of the first to close, we're going to be one of the last to reopen. Is it accurate that the industry faced challenges that other industries didn't?
I think so. I think this is always challenging to talk about because, you know, I think there's so many people and so many industries that have been massively affected. And I have this duality, right? I live during the day in the tech world, which by and large has not been affected by the pandemic to the degree that other industries have. If anything, there's been some positives in the tech world that have come from it, if that's a thing you can say. But music, like restaurants and bars and many, many other industries, you know, came to a grinding halt. So yeah, I think that is true, that we were probably the first to shut down and the last to reopen. I mean, we're open and have been open, but it's nothing like it was.
Right.
And you know, I think that ripple effect from that is far greater than anybody, including myself, really comprehends. It's you know, the artist on stage, it's all the people that are working in the venue, it's all the vendors that provide the food and beverages, it's the bus driver, there's just so many components that go into the industry. You know, I don't think anybody thinks about their job just all of a sudden one day, it's gone.
Yeah.
You know, it was just so dramatic. And but it's a resilient group. I mean, that's the other thing about it. It's a group that, you know, really wants to do what they were put on the earth to do. And so while we may be the last to come back, there's never been a doubt in my mind it would come back.
And certainly one of the ways that we saw your company adapt and survive was your outdoor series of shows, Rock the Ruins series at Holiday Park. How did that come together?
Yeah, that was really, really fun, and we're really proud of the first year out there. We had a relationship with the folks at the Holiday Park Foundation. It's a city park, but it's unique in that it has its own private foundation in conjunction with being operated by the city, and the foundation provides some additional direction and monetary benefits to the park. We had a relationship with a couple folks on that board. You know, when music stopped and we were kind of catching up with them and they were catching up with us, kind of very organically it came about, well, you know, we put on shows at the park, and historically those had been free shows where the community could come and maybe hear a local artist. There really wasn't even a stage. It was, you know, it was very organic. And and we had, since buying the venue in 2019, we had our sights set on more than one venue and not really knowing what that meant. And so it was a very natural partnership. They wanted to find new additional ways to get people to the park. We were shut down and needed a way to put on shows and had a desire to extend beyond the Vogue and really continue to do our work in the community. We made that decision to do the outdoor series last year, really at the end of March. And the first show was the third week of May. So we put the whole thing together in about 60 days. You know, I booked the shows, and we booked 9 shows. We had 8 of them sell out, so that was pretty incredible response from the community. And I think, you know, it's a unique setting. It's a wonderful family-friendly setting. But people were also very hungry for live music. I'm excited about the future of that series. I think it can be really differentiated here in this market.
All right, so you're hearing it here. Rock the Ruins 2022 is a go?
It's a go, yeah. Yeah, stay tuned for announcements, but it's a go.
Is it fun to, like, walk onto an open lawn and then X days or hours later, it's a music venue with a stage and a...
It was the best summer of my life, Dave. It really was. I took my oldest daughter is in college, and I was she's a music fan, and so I was telling her about what we were going to do back in April, and I took her out to Holiday Park, and I kind of showed her the empty field, and she said, "Dad, this is going to be Fire Festival."
Oh no!
she was very scared for you know, our ability to execute, and she was one of many who jumped in to help throughout the summer. But yeah, it was exhilarating to go from nothing being there to all of a sudden seeing, you know, a couple thousand people come through the gates and either hear their favorite band or just be outside with their friends and family. I've tried to describe it for the last several months, and I really have not found a way to articulate really what it meant to me, Scott, and Andrew. You know, we would work so hard to get the infrastructure set up and to put on a world-class experience, and then the band would start, and you'd walk through the crowd and just see the smiles, and people would come up to us and thank us for doing it, and it was just a real accretive experience. I can't think of a better way to say it than that. And I just personally, it was just best summer of my life. I realized that, you know, spending Friday and Saturday nights hanging out with other music fans, like, those are my people.
So meanwhile, to keep the Vogue afloat, like companies everywhere in the United States, you relied on relief funds. I think we were talking before we made this episode, and you mentioned between PPP loans and the Shuttered Venue Operators Grant and some other money. I think Indianapolis groups were kind of heroic in the help that they provided. We were talking around maybe $400,000 to $500,000. If that didn't come through, the Vogue might not be a music venue today.
Yeah, I think that's probably safe to say. You know, as I mentioned earlier, we amongst, like many other businesses, when our revenue stream went to zero, you know, our expense stream did not. And so we, you know, between rent and insurance and taxes and payroll and all the other things that a business has, we had a lot of expenses that continued to come in. And our strategy early on was to really keep all of our staff employed. And that remained a strategy really as long as we could. We did not make it all the way, but we made it a fair amount of the way. And I'm proud to say many, many people on that staff are at the Vogue again. Not all, but many. You mentioned, I think you used the word heroic, and I think that is the right word. Everybody from Josh Baker, who really organized the Indiana Independent Venue Alliance, and many, many others who care deeply about, you know, music in Indiana, you being one of them. I mentioned this recently in a piece that I did with Pattern, and they said, you know, what does Indy need in the music community? And I said, we need more collaboration. You know, there's this amazing model in the tech world. Silicon Valley is applauded for it, but it happens in other places too, where tech companies work together, not against each other. Josh and I think many others really spearheaded that in a time of crisis because we had to. And I hope that model continues, you know, long after. We are a city that is still trying to define ourselves in the broader music landscape. We can't afford to not work together. We just don't have enough inertia and size in that sphere yet. We will, but we're not there yet. So, you know, all of us have to work together for the greater good. And I think there's been a model of that during this time. I think oftentimes bad things, you know, good things come out of bad things. And that is one of the good things that has come out of this.
Yeah, from my perspective, one thing that was not or has not been built into, let's call it the live music industry, is like a public awareness component.
Yeah.
And it was impressive to see the Venue Alliance and the National Venue Alliance really have to hustle and go above and beyond to let people know kind of what was at stake.
Yeah, it really was. And you know, I had a lot of conversations with Josh through that period where, you know, we were talking about certain venues maybe only having a couple weeks left to right. make it. And what do we do about that? And how do we not let them die? And, you know, as somebody who got into this, first and foremost, because they love live music and they love the city, that became very important to me. We do run a business, and it's important, you know, to keep that business afloat. But there are some things that are even greater than that, and I think this started to highlight some of those. You know, the other thing I think is people don't necessarily. I never did as a general consumer. You don't realize all that goes into putting on an event
sure.
with that many people. You know, you just kind of show up, and there's your favorite artists, and you know, you get a beer, and everything's great. But I think what really became apparent to me during these times was we had a responsibility to continue to fight for these venues so that that experience could continue for the consumer, but all the people that it took to make that experience happen, you know, could do what they love too.
Right. Well, by my count, I think every venue that was regularly presenting live music in February of 2020 is back.
Yeah.
I know that didn't happen in every city.
No, it didn't. And the IIVA goes, you know, had a lot to do with that. It really did. And the spirit of Indianapolis has a lot to do with that. You know, there are other markets where people were celebrating when venues went out. Right. I hate to say that, but it's true. Right. Yeah. You know, the competitive juices, you know, extended beyond kind of what was right.
Okay, let's take a quick break so we can hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
Taft, today's modern law firm. With more than 625 attorneys across 11 offices, we provide solutions to the business issues facing middle market and emerging companies alike. We do this through a highly collaborative and inclusive team approach. Taft, the modern law firm. To learn more, visit taftlaw.com.
All right, we're back with this week's edition of the IBJ Podcast. Reporter Dave Lindquist is interviewing Eric Tobias, co-owner of the group that runs The Vogue in Broad Ripple, about weathering the pandemic.
I wanted to ask you about another part of the story, which is live streaming. High Alpha, the venture studio you co-founded, brought the world Mandolin in 2020. If people aren't familiar with that company, could you give us a capsule description?
Yeah, Mandolin's an amazing project, as you mentioned, that we've done out of High Alpha. It's a live streaming platform, so it allows artists to connect with fans in their homes or on any digital device. So think of it as a ticketed concert that you can watch literally from anywhere. And it was incredibly powerful during the pandemic when all of us were stuck in our homes and artists couldn't perform in these venues. They were able to put on performances from their homes and connect with people over the internet. It's been a super fun project for me. We started it back in, gosh, I guess March of 2020. You know, yeah. Just a couple weeks after that experience I described at The Vogue, the wheels went off, or the light bulb went off, that this was something we should pursue. The company's run by an incredible entrepreneur, Mary Kay Hughes, who I worked with at Salesforce and has been a long-time member of this community. She's created an incredible organization. They have 70 to 75 employees. They've put on, you know, a couple thousand shows now with artists, everybody from the Lumineers and John Legend down to, you know, kind of local musicians and independent musicians and everything in between. And again, you talk about just the power of music. You know, when those shows were first happening, I remember sitting there in my house watching on my laptop, and there's a little chat feed
right.
that goes yeah, on yeah. during the live stream, and just the outpouring of love from fans who had missed music. And, you know, we talk all the time about can that experience ever replace being in a venue? And you know, I don't think so. I really don't. I think they're mutually exclusive, and they both have a role. The point was never to replace it. It was to give the artist and give a fan an experience that, you know, maybe they otherwise wouldn't be able to get. You know, you kind of fast forward now that live shows are back. Mandolin's continuing to do live stream, but also getting into a lot of other unique digital services. So it's been fun to watch that company continue to evolve and grow.
Are the Vogue and Mandolin partners in any way?
The Vogue is a customer of Mandolin's.
Right.
So we stream shows that on Mandolin that occur in the Vogue. But no, there's no overlap in terms of partnership or relationship. I suppose I'm the common glue in that I have an interest in both entities.
Right.
But no, they're separate.
Okay. Thank you. I've had discussions with people about event attendance now that shows have returned, and it's true, probably. People who have been accustomed to staying at home, that might just be a behavior now. That might be a pattern of lifestyle that they might be reluctant to come out to the show. How do you combat that mindset?
Yeah, it's real. It's the craziest thing, Dave. When we first bought the venue, and if you sold 500 tickets, you could count on 498 people showing up. And now, not only is it harder to sell 500 tickets, but when you sell 500 tickets, maybe only 400 actually
Wow.
show up. And even crazier to me is, you know, we sell tickets in advance, and we sell tickets day of the show. And we will sell, let's just say we sell 50 tickets day of the show. Of those 50, maybe only 25 or 30 will show up. So you bought a ticket at 10 a.m., you paid money, and by 8 p.m. you decide you don't want to do that anymore.
That is surprising.
It's very unique and very different dynamic. So to answer your question, how do we combat that? I think the one thing that we've learned in this business that you might say, yeah, no duh, content is everything. You know, and if you get the right bands on stage and they have the right following and the right audience, people will come out to see that. And if you don't, it's an uphill battle. And so that remains our mission, is to get the right bands on stage. And then I also think you have to do things to make the experience as great as it can be. That was true pre-pandemic. It's really true post-pandemic or whatever period we're in.
Sure.
You know, where there's a lot of options for entertainment. So it's got to be a great experience, or people will very easily go do something else, if not stay home.
How do you find the sweet spot of these are the nights we need to be open and present shows and maybe not say yes to every tour we can buy?
I think we're still learning. I'd say that. When we bought the venue was historically open 2 to 3 nights a week. And part of our goal was to get that to be 4 or 5 nights a week. One of the things we wanted to make sure we did with the Vogue was re-welcome the community. It can serve so many different purposes, even beyond concerts. And late 2019, early 2020, we had achieved that goal. We had 4 to 5 shows on the schedule, and we had all kinds of different community events, whether that was our Movie Monday or doing yoga sessions. I mean, we just had all kinds of stuff going on, and it was wonderful. As we rebuild towards that, I think we have learned that not every show is a good show, not just for us, but for the fans and for the community. It's hard. It's hard to make those decisions about, you know, which show should we ultimately bring in. I think we're erring on, you know, we want to put on as many shows where there is an audience. And even if that means the audience is not as robust as it might be, you know, for those a couple hundred people, that might be the best night of their year.
And so next year it might be, you know, 33% more.
It might be. It might be. It might be. And we have a very long-term outlook on the Vogue. You know, the Vogue's been there since 1938, and if we have anything to do about it, it'll be there, you know, another 100 years. And so when you have that long-term view, you know, you want to get as many great shows as you can, and you want to give people the opportunity to see them, and over time, if you build it, they will come.
I see that health checks for proof of vaccinations or negative COVID-19 tests are a show-by-show basis at mm-hmm. the Vogue. Why is that the right approach for you?
Yeah, I think we serve so many different parts of the community and so many different types of artists, and we have so many different types of fans who have a lot of different types of beliefs, and our opinion is, as a business, it's not our job to tell people what to do or how to live their life. And so we do leave that up to the artist. And, you know, I think we've had a lot of positive feedback on that. We've had some negative feedback on that. I think the reality is nobody knows what the right answer is here. I would say 60, 70% of our shows require a health check. Mm-hmm. The 25 or 30% that don't, you know, that we'll leave that up to them.
45 is the name of your ownership group.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that name in places that made me think about 45 as a concert promoter.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a meaningful distinction as opposed to just saying so-and-so band at the Vogue? It says 45 presents so-and-so band at the Vogue. Is part of this something that came out of Rock the Ruins, or are you looking at taking 45 presents to other places?
We believe there is an opportunity to do more of what we've done at Rock the Ruins throughout the community. And we've been approached by many different organizations who have seen that work at Rock the Ruins and said, hey, I'd like you to consider doing that for us. So we're having some of those discussions, and I think you will see more of that from 45 Presents. You know, at our core, when we bought the business, we thought of it as all one thing.
Mm-hmm.
The venue promotes, the promoter runs the venue, and it's all kind of tied together. As we learn more about what it actually takes to run a live music event, they are two very distinctive things. And we have a great team at the Vogue that historically has specialized in operating the venue. And we are building the muscle and the resources to really be a great promoter. And again, that's a long game. We historically have always had the approach and the strategy to partner with many different promoters. That will always continue. That's an important part of what the Vogue is and the ecosystem here in Central Indiana. But we absolutely are in the promotion business, and part of labeling it as 45 is just to acknowledge what we're actually already doing.
I'm a person who likes origin stories. Why is the company called 45?
It's actually a really great story. So my partner, Scott Craigie, discovered this, that back in the 30s and 40s, the cable car that ran, at that point in time, college was one direction. It was north only. And the cable car that ran from downtown Indy by the Vogue running north was called the 45.
Nice.
And, of course, 45 has a music
yeah.
connotation.
Yeah.
So when he kind of discovered all that, it just seemed like the perfect name for us.
So when I started writing about music back in the 20th century in Indianapolis, there was one concert promotion company that was so dominant that it kind of ran off any independent promoters who wanted to do business. And certainly today, there's a very different landscape, and a lot of independent promoters are doing a lot of interesting things and collaborations. And, you know, this goes back to something that you were talking about. Yeah, I just think the more the merrier, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the right approach. I mean, everybody that I talk to, whether it's a fan or whether it's somebody working in music here in the city, or even, I'll just extend it even further, working in the arts here in the city, everybody wants Indianapolis to be thought of at the same level as the big players. And I believe we have the chance to do that. We've done it in healthcare, and we've done it in tech, and there is no reason we can't do that in a sector like the arts. The only way that happens is if we band together and create something that is differentiated and special. And one of the ways that we can differentiate is through collaboration. That does not happen in every city. It does not happen in every market. And, you know, I wasn't in the business during the time you are referencing, but I've heard enough of the stories to know that having one dominant monopoly was not necessarily good. It wasn't necessarily good for the music business. It really wasn't good for the fan, because all of a sudden you start to get limited shows, and because of the dynamics
right.
that go behind that. So I think what's happening right now is a very, very positive thing. I meet with a lot of young entrepreneurs who want to become promoters. And, you know, I'm still learning to be a promoter, but I know something about being an entrepreneur, and I'm trying to encourage them to, you know, do their thing, because the more we have happening, I believe it's kind of a, you know, rising tide lifts all boats.
You've talked about your day gig and your after hours gig. What's the secret to wearing those hats and being able to balance those roles?
I think they intertwine a lot more than, you know, maybe is on the surface. I spend a lot of time at High Alpha working on new ideas and then recruiting talent to work on those new ideas. And some of that talent is here in the city. Some of that talent comes from outside of the city with distributed work and remote work. You know, we're hiring people at High Alpha from all over. And when they think about a place they want to live, you know, it goes beyond the job. They want to know that there's great restaurants and great nightlife and fun things to do. And so music is a big part of that. Some people play golf on the weekends to relax and unwind. I've always gone to live shows. It's really, really fun to be able to have some say in which live shows you go to in the venue that you happen to own. And, you know, beyond that, there's a lot of similarities. You got to hire great people. You got to trust those people to do their job. Yeah. And it's a ton of fun, let me tell you that.
Do you look at it as an honor or a pressure to be the caretaker of the Vogue in terms of its stature in Broad Ripple? And do you have thoughts on challenges in the neighborhood these days?
It's a great question. Not a cop-out, but I would say both. I mean, it's definitely an honor. I do feel pressure in a good way that people care about that place. They want it to thrive. They want it to be around. And so it's a responsibility in the best of ways. I think Broad Ripple is very well poised for a renaissance. And it's not obvious to see that, but if you know, I happen to spend my day job down at the Bottle Works District. And that, as an example, if you drove by Bottle Works a couple years ago, you'd say, you know, there's nothing here. And now you drive by and it's just incredibly vibrant and alive. Really a bright, shining spot of downtown. And, you know, Broad Ripple has so much eclectic nature. It brings together so many parts of our city and the various, you know, elements of our community. And I think in an era where we are all so separated and divisive, Broad Ripple serves a role in bringing people together. We need more of that in our world and certainly in our local community.
This has been a real treat. Eric, thanks so much. I've enjoyed my guest host stint on the IBJ podcast. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Dave.
My thanks again to Eric Tobias and especially Dave Lindquist. You probably can tell he's an experienced podcaster, and we're looking forward to having him on again in the near future. Now, before you get on with the rest of your week, there are a few stories in the latest print edition of IBJ I want to bring to your attention. Number one, a bill already under consideration by the Indiana legislature orders that any worker who requests a religious exemption to an employer's vaccine mandate can automatically get one, quote, without further inquiry, end quote. As John Russell reports, the bill raises thorny questions about the balance between a worker's religious freedoms and the right of employers to keep workplaces safe for coworkers, customers, and, in the case of hospitals and clinics, severely ill patients. Also in this week's issue, Mickey Shuey questions whether city tourism and sports officials properly vetted a financially troubled developmental football association before it racked up some $1.4 million in unpaid bills in Indianapolis last spring. And Dave Lindquist explains how the college football playoff national championship, set for January 10th in Indianapolis, plans to make a big investment in local teachers and students. Again, you can find these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at IBJ.com. I will say, as I usually do, that it's quite a bit easier to access all of the latest local news about business and politics and all of IBJ's data on Central Indiana's business community and economy if you're a subscriber. It works out to about $2 per week for actionable information you're not going to find anywhere else. Just go to IBJ.com and click on the subscribe button. Thanks for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which, at least for this week, is edited by me, Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.